Hi, Dave Emery here. This is side one of For the Record program number 787, The Muslim Brotherhood Spring, subtitled I Told You So. This has been recorded on April 11th of the year 2014. During the time that I was ill, and I had a dental infection that spread and was actually life-threatening at one point, and I had to have major surgery and a long period of convalescence, still awaiting the new chops. So I sound a little funny. That is why. However, during the time that I was not in a position to record, I was writing away, and a great many very important things took place. In For the Record programs 733 through 739, about the Arab Spring, as it has been called, I voiced my detailed opinion that, in the first place, this was a covert operation being executed by the GOP / transnational corporation / underground Reich faction of our bifurcated intelligence system and State Department. I stated also that the goal of this was ultimately to bring the Muslim Brotherhood to power throughout the Islamic world so that, on the one hand, they could install corporatist economics in which they believe in the Arab and Islamic world, and also so that they could be used as combatants, as proxy warriors against both Russia and against China, and ultimately against the United States itself. In For the Record program number 749. John Loftus confirmed on side two, when I asked him about the Arab Spring, he said, quote, "The Arab Spring is us." In other words, that the Arab Spring was indeed a U.S. intelligence operation. I would opine that it was an operation by the, again, aforementioned GOP / transnational corporation or corporate / underground Reich faction of our intelligence system and State Department, and I stated at the time that one of the ultimate goals would be the destabilization of the Obama administration itself. I would note in passing that both the Benghazi attack on the U.S. embassy and the bloody Syrian civil war are direct outgrowths of the, quote, Arab Spring, unquote. From here on, we will refer to this as the Muslim Brotherhood Spring. I also noted in those programs, and this information is recapped in the description for the Record 787, that one of the principal U.S. intelligence assets that was used in this particular operation, perhaps without his knowledge, that was a fellow named Gene Sharp, who, interestingly enough, very much like Brian Glynn Williams, the, quote, ex-unquote CIA officer, who was the tutor to Dzhokhar Tsarnaev, one of the accused Boston Marathon bombers. He also teaches at the University of Massachusetts at Dartmouth. Gene Sharp has more intelligence connections than a switchboard at Langley. And I would note that the pronouncements of Gene Sharp were not only used by the apparently willing and idealistic support of people in Tahrir Square, but also by people in the former Yugoslavia and by people who helped to bring about the Orange Revolution in the Ukraine. That brought Mr. Yushchenko to power, and it directly foreshadowed not only the ascension of the OUNB heirs, such as Svoboda and Pravi Sektor in Ukraine, but it also really could be seen as the precursor to the $5 billion funded operation in the Ukraine. That from Victoria Nuland, an Undersecretary of State and a former George W. Bush State Department member. She said at a gathering that the U.S. had $5 billion invested in the Ukraine. I think that we can look on the Muslim Brotherhood Spring and the Ukrainian operations, both the Orange Revolution and the putsch that ousted the corrupt and incompetent Viktor Yanukovych as part of the same general covert operations template. This is the new covert operations template in which, quote, democracy, unquote, is the banner on which under which the operation takes place in both the Ukrainian case and in the Muslim Brotherhood Spring. The outcome of that has been for outright fascist organizations which track back directly to the axis of World War II, in the case of the Muslim Brotherhood Spring, as we call it, the Muslim Brotherhood itself, an Islamic fascist organization that was allied with the Axis in World War II and that then found sponsorship by Western intelligence agencies, chiefly the CIA, MI6, and also BND, in the post-war period in order to be used as anti-communist cadre. The Afghan Mujahideen who fought against the Soviets as part of a U.S. covert operation, the Al-Qaeda organization, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and Hamas are all direct offshoots of the Muslim Brotherhood. In the Ukraine, of course, as we saw in For the Record programs 777 through 784, the heirs to the OUNB came to power. And again, in the description for this program, I know we have recapitulated the information about Gene Sharp, his many intelligence connections, and the role of his teachings, perhaps not entirely with his knowledge, in both the Muslim Brotherhood Spring and the Orange Revolution in the Ukraine. Again, go to the SpitfireList.com website, select the For the Record category, and all of the For the Record shows and long written article-length descriptions of the programs can be accessed in that category. What we're going to do in this program is to take a look at the Muslim Brotherhood Spring and the things that have taken place that, frankly, at the risk of seeming a trifle self-righteous, in which case I will apologize in advance, things that took place that were precisely what I had been warning about and predicting. Let's begin with the following. And again, this is due to the fact that because I was unable to record for a couple of years, really for more, we have some catching up to do. So that is what we are doing, is catching up on the Muslim Brotherhood Spring, the operation that became known as the Arab Spring. Now, recall that after the demonstrations in Tahrir Square and the overthrow of Hosni Mubarak, everybody was celebrating, and hosannas and the hallelujahs were sounding all over the place that finally democracy was coming to the Arab world. We noted that the operation that became the Arab Spring or the Muslim Brotherhood Spring was actually begun when George W. Bush was in office. And again, I predicted explicitly that the Muslim Brotherhood would come to power. That was the idea. And that the result would be Islamic fascism. Since, of course, the Muslim Brotherhood government of Mohamed Morsi was overthrown by the Egyptian army, in some ways very similar to the Russian army moving in to the Crimea, reoccupying the Crimea in response to the twinned operation in the Ukraine, again stemming from a theological pronouncement of Gene Sharp that brought the OUNB heirs to power in the Ukraine. By way of discussing what happened in the, quote, Arab Spring, unquote, that I call the Muslim Brotherhood Spring, let's begin by taking a look at a post that is from a broadcast on CNN of December 5th of 2012. This is by Hassan Amin, A-M-I-N, titled, Bloody Clashes Around Egyptian Presidential Palace. An excerpt here, a section called Haunted by Islamic Fascist. It reads, after the huge peaceful protest yesterday against Morsi, today it turned into a bloody battle between the protesters and Morsi's supporters, Islamists and pro-Islamists, mainly. Islamist thugs beat the protesters who said no to the Morsi dictatorial decree exactly what happened during the Egyptian Revolution when Mubarak sent his thugs to attack the protesters in Tahrir Square. Now, Mohamed Morsi, the president of Egypt, is a textbook Islamic fascist who eliminates the opposition or unleashes his thugs to attack them. It is remarkable that no one in the police or the army was involved in this battle, and it is suspicious. The absence of security forces in this critical area, the presidential palace diameter. The situation in Egypt is getting uglier all the time. And what we're going to do is to take a look at a very, it is loaded with a poignant sarcasm, frankly, but I think in the absence of real reportage about what was taking place in Egypt and our media, the Ministry of Truth have been just horrendous, doing the same thing basically with regard to Egypt that they were doing with regard to the Ukraine. They are glossing over the outright fascists, for the most part, that were holding sway there, or in the case of Ukraine, still are, and they were not telling the American people the truth about what was really going on. And almost certainly, this was due to the fact that the chosen proxies of the Muslim Brotherhood Spring covert operation, both in Ukraine and in Egypt, though they were fascist, were the boys of choice, so to speak, for the powers that be. In the blog Daily News Egypt of December 10th of 2012, there was a very sarcastic and yet very poignantly eloquent article posted by Mahmoud Salem, last name capital, S-A-L-E-M, as in Mary. It's titled Imagine, just like the old John Lennon song. It reads, imagine sitting at a friend's house watching the president address the nation after a week-long crisis, with his supporters just the night before having opened fire on civilian protesters in Heliopolis in horrifying clashes that spanned the whole day. Imagine finding out that he issued the illegal constitutional declaration that both inflamed and divided the country because, and I quote, one of the suspects in the camel incidents, by the way, that was during the uprising that overthrew Mubarak. Late in that event, some Mubarak supporters charged the demonstrators in Tahrir Square and beat on, they were riding on camels and beat them with canes and whips, beginning again. Imagine finding out that he issued the illegal constitutional declaration that both inflamed and divided the entire country because, and here I quote, one of the suspects in the camel incidents, who was declared innocent by the courts, had a meeting with three other unnamed people in his office. The president, who controls state security, general intelligence, military intelligence, the Ministry of Justice, the police, and the general prosecutor's office, declares that he had no choice but to issue this declaration because four people had a meeting. And then, as he swipes the page of his speech on his iPad, he instinctively licks his finger first as if he is turning a paper page. Imagine. Imagine that this president saw that the situation was so urgent he called for a national dialogue meeting with the opposition in 2 days to resolve the crisis. A meeting that had all of his allies and none of the opposition in attendance. The president walks in, talks for 5 minutes, then leaves the dialogue he called for immediately, telling the assembled people to talk to his vice president, and that he is leaving in order to guarantee, quote, the neutrality of the dialogue, unquote. Imagine that this group's uber-intellectual, Fahmy Howady, last name capital H-O-W-E-R-D-Y, shortly afterward also leaves because he had another important meeting to attend, and that then this group of clowns come up with a solution after midnight that isn't a solution at all, drafted by ex-presidential candidate Salim al-Awa, who wrote the Sudanese constitution that eventually led to Sudan getting divided into two countries. The Brotherhood fronted that guy. Just imagine, parenthetically, the government, the Bashir government in the Sudan that committed genocide in Darfur and elsewhere, was a Muslim Brotherhood government. That's the reference here, and this guy was working with that government. Continuing. Imagine that the next day you are no longer greeted with the president's face on TV, but with those of the Supreme Guide of the Muslim Brotherhood and his second-in-charge, Khairat el-Shater, who both hold press conferences defending the president in hiding while the army builds walls around the presidential palace. Imagine watching the Supreme Guide claiming that all those who died in the clashes belong to the Muslim Brotherhood, despite the fact that there were dead Christians among the casualties. Imagine watching el-Shater talking about how hard it is to get investment into the country and blaming the whole crisis on the Christians and the church. Imagine knowing that those are the people who run the order that is running your country at the moment. Imagine. Imagine knowing that your president, the first civilian, democratically elected post-revolution president, is actually a puppet for that group, parenthetically, the Brotherhood, and that his puppeteer is the second in charge in this order and not even the first. Imagine that this group has its people for 2 weeks wondering openly on TV talk shows about why the people, after a revolution, cannot tolerate having a temporary dictatorship for a few months, since they endured it under Mubarak for 30 years. Imagine then being unable to comprehend that because you won an election by a mere 1% of the vote, you can't just do anything you damn please in the name of democracy because you are the majority. Imagine them openly stating that this constitution, since it supports Sharia law, will have a 90% support among the populace, and that the opposition are all Christians and foreign agents and number no more than 40,000 in the entire country, and that they want to repeat the process of writing the Constitution to allow gay marriage. Imagine. Imagine that this group is still pushing for a referendum over a constitutional draft that was created by an illegal constituent assembly from which a third of its members withdrew, while an entire country goes up in flames over it, with hundreds of thousands of Egyptians in the governance are protesting and clashing with this group's supporters. Imagine that with this referendum being 4 days away, the president has no judges to supervise it, no schools to host it, no open door for journalists or observers to go in and observe the process, and no way for the voters to find out where they are supposed to vote. Your country's constitution. Imagine. Imagine that the secular side is the majority for the first time, with people in the streets all over Egypt viewing this as a referendum on the Muslim Brotherhood and Morsi, and want to vote no on both and teach them a lesson. And here he, in this last paragraph, he scores the opposition as well. And I suspect that his frustration was in part shared by the Egyptian army and led to the coup. Continuing. Imagine them finally rallying behind a unified opposition front called the National Salvation Council, who just yesterday issued that they will boycott the first referendum they actually have a great shot of winning because they think it is an illegitimate referendum and we shouldn't dignify it with our votes, despite it being the country's constitution and everything. Just freaking imagine. And again, that is how the article reads, and again, that is from the Daily News Egypt. It's called Imagine by Mahmoud Salem. It is from December 10th of the year 2012. Now, the draft constitution in Egypt, again, was to implement Sharia law, Islamic law, and had a number of very interesting features in it. And one of the things that it talks about here, and by the way, there is much more information on this, much more text in the written description for the program, but because we are limited in terms of time, the Associated Press of December 1st, 2012, had a story highlights from Egypt's draft constitution, and this reads in part, an Islamist-dominated panel is voting on Egypt's draft constitution, the country's first charter after the uprising that toppled Hosni Mubarak. The draft largely reflects the conservative vision of the Islamists, with articles that rights activists, liberals, and Christians fear will lead to restrictions on the rights of women and minorities and civil liberties in general. Omissions of certain articles, such as bans on slavery or promises to adhere to international rights treaties, were equally worrying to critics of the new draft, who pulled out from the panel before the vote. Again, listen to this. Omissions of certain articles, such as bans on slavery or promises to adhere to international rights treaties, were equally worrying to critics of the new draft. They omitted a ban on slavery. This would have been great news to the people that backed Eddie Snowden. When you get behind the official hosannas and hallelujahs being offered up to Edward Snowden, on whose efforts I did a 16-part series, The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, you again come across people who quite literally believe in slavery, the slavery of the Confederacy, and they believe in that the South should secede again, and in the case of one Ron Paul supporter, voluntary slavery, the ultimate oxymoron and the ultimate collateralized debt obligation. And again, that was the draft constitution. That's one of the reasons that the Egyptian people rose up. And even when they could not get their act together, that was one of the reasons that the Egyptian army ultimately overthrew the Morsi government. Time permitting, we're going to talk about the fact that one of the things that Morsi did was to appoint a member of Gamal al-Islamiyah. That is an al-Qaeda affiliate, some of whose members, as we looked at in 455, 457, for the record, that is, 455, 457, and 402, were involved with the attack on a bunch of tourists in Luxor in the late 1990s. They killed a bunch of them, and I would note that Egypt's badly ailing economy is in many ways dependent on tourism, having tourists at the very famous Luxor site slaughtered by al-Qaeda affiliates is just not the best publicity for your tourist industry, and to appoint a member of the group that did that killing to be governor of Luxor, which is what Morsi did, that may very well have been the straw that broke the camel's back, no pun intended. Again, I'm generally speaking, no pun intended in this case, military coups don't work out well, but I think that the actions of the Egyptian army and Russia's action in reoccupying the Ukraine, the Crimea, I should say, in the Ukraine, can be seen as equivalent actions, both in response to covert operations that were bringing fascists to power. And as we've seen, the teachings of intelligence asset Gene Sharp figured both in the Ukrainian situation and also in the Muslim Brotherhood Spring. Sadly, again, we here in the United States have not been treated to the truth about what is going on. A very, very important post in the blog Raymond Ibrahim, Islam Translated from February 4th of 2014, features what are purported to be some tapped phone calls of some of the conversations that were engaged in by Mohamed Morsi. Egyptian intelligence monitored these, according to a paper, Al-Watan, and then leaked some of the transcripts to this newspaper, which then published them. In these transcripts, it is alleged that President Morsi was networking directly with Mohamed Zawahiri, the brother of al-Qaeda leader Ayman Zawahiri, and that Mohammed Zawahiri was functioning as something of a liaison between the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood and al-Qaeda. As will be seen in these transcripts, it is alleged that Morsi and Mohammed and Ayman Zawahiri were going to work together not only to bring Sharia to Muslim law, Islamic law, to power in Egypt, but to eliminate the democratic opposition. And beyond that, the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood was going to, and apparently did, offer substantive support for various jihadist efforts, including in the Sinai, and as we will see, in the Benghazi attack as well. I have noted that the Republicans have been attacking both Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton over the Benghazi incident. That was a direct outgrowth of the Muslim Brotherhood Spring. I predicted that that would ultimately, the Muslim Brotherhood Spring, that covert operation, would ultimately be used to destabilize Obama. I would note that Obama and Hillary Clinton have been under fire, both for the Benghazi incident, about which we will have more to say later, and over the conduct of the brutal Syrian civil war, which also is a direct outgrowth of the Muslim Brotherhood Spring operation. Again, as noted in this, the direct confirmation of the allegations carried in Al-Watan awaits the final results of the release of the proceedings in Morsi's trial. As he notes, however, much of this dovetails directly with what we already know, including Morsi's call to release the blind sheikh, Sheikh Rahman, who was convicted in connection with some 9/11-related conspiracies in New York City. I would note also that the number two man in the Muslim Brotherhood, the aforementioned Qairat al-Shatir, was visited by Republican Senators John McCain and Lindsey Graham while he was in prison. John McCain was also among the American political figures who met with Oleg Tyanibuk, the head of the OUNB Air Svoboda organization, the explicit heir to the OUNB Nazi collaborationist government of the Ukraine during World War II. So McCain is definitely a man about town. He meets with Qairat al-Shatir and also with Oleg Tyanibuk. The former meeting took place along with Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, and both Graham and John McCain have been among the Republican Hallelujah chorus that have been screeching about the misconduct by Barack Obama and by Hillary Clinton, I suspect helping to pave the way for the Jeb Bush candidacy in 2016, something that I expect to happen. In the second side of this program, we're going to read this entire post into the record. Again, it remains to be absolutely confirmed. However, it dovetails very precisely with what we already know, and I suspect it is not only spot on, but it is the reason, it is the basic reason for the move by the Egyptian army to depose Mohammed Morsi and the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood government that he brought to power. However, we're going to do that in side two of this program. This concludes side one of For the Record program number 787, The Muslim Brotherhood Spring, subtitle I Told You So, being recorded on April 11th of the year 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.